You know, when it comes to wireless carriers, sometimes what you see isn't always what you get, except with Visible. With Visible, what you see is exactly what you get. If you haven't heard of Visible, well, now you have. They're the wireless carrier that's making wireless visible. It's in the name. With Visible, there are no hidden fees, no fine print, no hassle, nothing to hide. It's just $25 a month, all taxes and fees included. And you don't need more than one line of wireless to save. You can save on a line all to yourself with unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon. And again, just $25 a month. The future of wireless is here, and it is transparent. If you want more transparency in your wireless plan, you want to be on the Visible plan. Switch to Visible today and save at Visible.com. That's Visible.com. Monthly rate on the Visible plan. For data management practices and additional terms, visit Visible.com. This episode of GameScoop is sponsored by Squarespace. If you're looking for a way to make your business stand out and succeed online, Squarespace is the all-in-one website platform for you. They take the stress out of creating an awesome website, engaging with your audience, and selling anything from products to content to time, so you're able to focus on, you know, everything else. In other words, you'll have more time for gaming. With the new guided design system, you can choose from curated layouts and styling options to build a unique online presence from the ground up, optimized for every device. And with Squarespace's integrated, optimized SEO tools, you'll show up more often to more people. Squarespace doesn't just make things easier for you. Checkout for your customers is made seamless with simple but powerful payment tools that allow you to accept credit cards, PayPal, and Apple Pay, and in eligible countries, offer the option to buy now and pay later with Afterpay and Clearpay. So whether you're just starting out or looking to expand your existing brand, be sure to visit squarespace.com for a free trial, and when you're ready to launch, go to squarespace.com/gamescoop to save 10% off your first purchase of a website or domain. That's squarespace.com/gamescoop for 10% off. What's up, everybody? Welcome to IGN GameScoop. I'm your host, Damon Hatfield. Joining me this week, I mean, really joining me this week, is Justin Davis.
Scoop!
Nick Lamone is here.
Hey, how's it going?
Sitting in for Tina. And Sam Claiborne is also here. He's calling in from San Francisco.
Hey, everybody. Good to be here.
It's good to be here for all of us as well. If you're watching the video version of the show, you may have noticed that 75% of us are in the same room together. Right here in our studio in LA, so.
It's been a while.
It has been a very long while. Please be gentle with us, dear viewers and listeners. We'll see if we remember how to podcast in person. But we've got a great show planned for you this week. We're going to talk about the richest and poorest video game characters based on A-list. It's not IGN's list. It is A-list of the richest and poorest.
Is that a Forbes list over there?
Game characters. This publication.
Bless me backpipes.
This publication is not quite Forbes. We'll get to that. We'll also talk about our dream Star Wars games. But first, as usual, we can begin with what we've been playing. Of course, I'm still playing Elden Ring, but I'm not here to talk about that today. I've been playing a game that I've been looking forward to for a long time, Justin.
What?
Rogue Legacy 2.
Oh, does it finally come out of? Because it's been in early access.
It's been in early access for a year.
2 years.
Is it that long?
Yeah, you gave it a good score.
We did our reviews up. Mitchell Salzman did the review for IGN. He gave it a 9 out of 10. Amazing.
Awesome.
So that's great. It's super. It's a hard Damien game. It leans into hard Damien game territory. And I'm enjoying it. My first impression, I've done several runs. I've played 2 or 3 hours of it so far. My first impression is that it feels a lot like Rogue Legacy.
Okay.
And it has a makeover. The first Rogue Legacy has like pixel art.
Yeah.
And now it's like this sort of cartoon, sort of Castle Crashers style art.
I mean, it does look like Rogue Legacy still, though, which is cool.
And it feels like it. My first impression is that it almost feels like a remake of the original because the gameplay loop is the same. A lot of the enemies are the same. The traps are the same. So it's too early, for me to say I'm like disappointed in that. But that's just my first impression. It's like this feels like very much like the original Rogue Legacy in a prettier version.
Okay, but like Rogue Legacy ripped. That game was great.
It did. And Mitchell in his review even sort of acknowledged what I was saying. He says Rogue Legacy 2 is a transformative sequel that essentially rebuilds the influential 2013 original into a modern roguelite that stands nearly shoulder to shoulder with the best of the genre. Oh, it is 2013, so almost 10 years old now.
Now, the thing I haven't
that game
really
felt so modern.
Yeah.
I haven't really been following Rogue Legacy 2 because when a game gets announced as early access, I kind of treat it as it does not exist sure. until it comes out. Therefore, I can be surprised when 1.0 finally launches. So does it iterate on the first game in any outside of the visual overhaul? Like it, just based on the footage that we're seeing, it looks a lot like zippier, a lot faster, a little more elegant. It reminds me a lot of Dead Cells. For some reason, I don't know why. There's just something just seamless like, about the movement now.
The movement of it, sure. There's some new tricks, you know, air dashing and things like that. Of course, I'm still very early on, so maybe as I get deeper into it, it'll start to feel more different. I think there are 6 different areas to explore now as opposed to the 4 of the original. So there's new areas, new bosses, and that sort of thing. But
it's 2 more areas.
Just, I know, that checks out. I'm actually being told in my IFB, our fact checkers are on it. That checks out. Anyway, Rogue Legacy 2, I'm excited to dive into it more.
Awesome.
Nick, so what's up, Sam?
Well, I was going to ask, does it all take place in a, like, I mean, I can see the footage that we're looking at right now. Is it all still like in a castle, or is it like, does it have like bigger environs that you've gotten to yet?
Well, already I've gotten like underneath the castle into like the caverns where it's dark, and I actually don't have the item that'll let me see in the dark yet. So I'm not supposed to be there yet. But
the last game had like, remember it had like 4 regions, right? It had the gardens and then like the underground and like something else.
Yeah.
And then, it's not an immediate expansion of that type of thing, though. It's not like, oh, it's like in the desert and the swamp and the snow.
Well,
and like
you definitely start out in a castle. You start out in a castle again. Mm-hmm. We'll see where it goes from there.
Mm.
Okay. Nick, what have you been playing?
So I definitely suffer from I play too many things all at once, but just for the sake of the podcast, I figured I'd distill it down to its essence. I've been rediscovering old GBA games, so right now replaying Drill Dozer, which is a fantastic good time.
Yeah.
Real good. I like Game Freak gets a lot out of very simple commands and buttons on the GBA, and it's a wildly good time. Apart from that, picked up the Chrono Cross remaster for PS4, playing it on PS5. Beautiful game. The soundtrack, again, still immaculate. A lot of frame rate issues in that bad boy.
Mixed things about that.
It's a poor performance than how it was on the PS1, which is not ideal.
Yeah.
But the one I've spent the most time playing, and I kind of picked it up on a whim, it's one of those games I've heard about a lot over the years, but it never really grabbed me, but it was on sale on Steam. So I picked up Chernobylite, which is a post-apocalyptic Soviet era like survival game, which is usually like, I'm not big into survival games. I don't really like building bases in my games, crafting supplies and all that jazz. But what really grabs me about it is that there is a framing device for it where there is a story, the game does end, and there is a means to an end in all of the building and all the crafting, which when it's aimless, like in something like Minecraft, I feel more like put off by it. But the fact that it is literally just, I need to build something so that I can craft lockpicks to open this thing and get new supplies, I dig that. I like that it's all utilitarian as opposed to just have a fun time and make the world the way you want it. I don't really care about that. I just like to get into buildings and rummage around and get radioactive. It's a good time though.
Yeah.
If you're a fan of Stalker, if you're a fan of Stalker or like the Metro Exodus, Metro Last Light, all that jazz, very similar, just a nice modern twist to it. And it just got released on PS5 and Xbox Series X, if I'm not mistaken, with an enhanced edition. So you can do either 4K 30 or you can do 1080 60 frames per second.
Cool.
Awesome.
Justin, I know you're traveling. Work,
yeah. So I downloaded, I realized I'm 2 Picross games behind.
Yeah, it's easy to get behind Picross.
I don't know when they came out with 2 more of them. So, you know, I bought the last one that I hadn't bought, and it's always a great, it's like the perfect takeoff and landing game. It's like, I don't want to start like a real game, like, because I don't have that much time, but like Picross. And then I also downloaded this super rad Switch game called Gata Protectors.
I've seen it's a tower defense game, right?
Well, kind of, not really. It like the genre almost like defies description. It's top down. It has kind of like 8-bit pixel art graphics, so not 16-bit, but kind of like earlier and lower fi than that. It does have defense elements where basically the premise of the game is you have this princess you're trying to protect, and you can build defenses, but it's mainly like it's almost like an NES Mosu game. Like it's just hundreds and hundreds of enemies, and then you play some character. It's more of an action game. Like you go out into the world and like defeat all these goblins and stuff, and then there's areas where the enemies spawn and you have to destroy their little spawners and then win the levels. And it's very the writing is much better and more clever and funnier than it has any right to be. I think like John Riccardi and like some of the old EGM crew are like on the writing staff of this game. Oh. And the writing does like, it comes right up to the line of like, is this cheesy? Yeah. Is this bad actually?
What I've seen, it did give me pause because I don't like it. Indie games can be too like self-referential.
There's a lot of that, but it is like no one would ever say the game doesn't have like personality and like memorable. I would rather it like veer toward maybe being too much than just being like boring and bland and like I just want to skip it and I don't care. And I actually, so it's a sequel to a 3DS game. So I dug out of my closet and dusted off my 3DS to buy the original Gata Protectors too. And so now I have both of them. I have the Switch one and I have the 3DS one before the 3DS eShop shuts down. Oh. And my 3DS, I haven't turned it on in literally years and it had a charge. Still
working.
That's amazing.
Yeah. So I played them both and they're both rad. I highly recommend them.
Cool. Does the 3DS screen look like so quaint and funny and dim now when you look at it?
Yeah, dude, after playing on the Switch and like I play a lot of games on iPad too. Yeah. The 3DS screen was a little bit of a trip, but like everything else, after 10 minutes you'd reacclimate and then you're fine. But it was very weird. I kept trying to do the touch screen with my finger before I remembered, oh yeah, there's a little stylus you have to slide out, and it was a stylus thing.
Which 3DS do you have?
The original one, whatever the
electric. So it's extra
blue.
Small, yeah. Especially by comparison now. Every screen is huge now. Yeah. So now it's like, oh my gosh, I can't even see it.
Yeah. And then I realized there's a few like 3DS, like everyone's in a panic over the eShop shutting down. Mm-hmm. And so I'm starting to do some research on 3DS eShop exclusives that maybe I want to download before the console goes away forever. And I would say Gata Protectors, it's up there. Check it out.
And Sam, what have you moved on from after unpacking?
I started Spiritfarer into Unpacking. It's on Game Pass.
That's right.
I've been like, it's the only thing I want to do. I love it. It's a really cool combination of kind of what Nick was talking about. A lot of like, you know, you build out it's 2D, but you build out a town. So the town is like kind of how you draw like a little 2D town as a kid, where it's like layers of buildings stacked on top of buildings, all on a boat. And then you move that boat around an open world. So it's like you're building in farming and doing like, you know, kind of like Sims type stuff. But at the same time, you can park at an island and then go like platform around that island. And like I have a couple skills, like a double jump and a float. And like that's actually let me go back to other islands and like explore other areas, and not like a Metroid way, but in kind of an item upgradey way, which is always like a blast, right? It's my favorite type of game. So it mixes in those elements. So I really like, I know, I think Damon specifically, you don't really like, you know, the Animal Crossings or the Stardew Valley type games. And this has some elements of that, right? Because you build a village and you can talk to people and they have lives. But you also are building a craft and using that to get further in the game. And then you're upgrading your own skills. And then the exploration part is really fun. So I really like it. And there's a really cool aesthetic to it. Very, very nice, you know, replication of hand animation. So it's like something that's drawn really nicely and then like animated in kind of a fun, choppy way. And then when you're out just like cruising, it feels like Wind Waker, where it's like, I actually like the time between times. But this game gives you stuff to do on the boat. So if you just sit there, just look at the distance, and like while you're traveling, it's like the sun is rising or setting, and there's like cool storms coming in. Like it's gorgeous. It's really neat. You can fish off the side of the boat while you're doing that. So you can appreciate multiple things at once, or you can just go and like start cooking and smelting and planting if you want. In like, because your whole entire existence is like built in this like tower on this boat that you're moving around. It's brilliant. What a brilliant game.
Spiritfarer rules.
Spiritfarer is very good. I'm also a big fan of how the game incentivizes you to build not only to how you like to do it, but according to villager requests, where people want to be near certain things. And it really brings me back to like the era of Dark Cloud on the PS2, where it's like, oh, people are like, I want to be next to the livery. I want to be next to the fishing hut or whatever. And trying to accommodate that, you get extra goodies. And it just really incentivizes you to explore and play around with how you build stuff out. It's a good time.
Cool.
Oh, yeah. I did start Tunic before I left.
Oh, there you go.
It's so
nice.
Good.
Nice.
Well, Tunic is great.
Sam's but it'll right. Be, I mean, it'll be interesting to see how easy it is for you to get back into it.
It's
daunting for me.
As long
about
as you
going
leave off on a boss, you're fine. You know, if you left off on a boss, you're boned.
I mean, that game, I forget exactly how you phrased it, Sam, but like that game could have been a cute fox going on a Zelda-like adventure and be like, okay, it's a good video game. Yeah. But like it immediately is like sort of impressing upon you like deeper meaning and like greater ambitions than just being like a cute Fox Zelda clone. Like it's so immediately apparent that it's kind of something special and has more going on under the hood. I'm excited to get home and play more of that. And also, I guess, to see my kids. But, but got to get back to that Fox game.
This episode of Game Scoop is brought to you by NordVPN. As Scoop Nation knows, your Omega Cops have been a little obsessed with a movie called Weekend at Bernie's lately. But as happens too often these days, it is difficult to find it streaming here in the US. That's where NordVPN comes in. With NordVPN, you can switch your virtual location to a more enlightened region where they appreciate the comic delights of Weekend at Bernie's. And it's not just for streaming movies and shows. Switching your virtual location can allow you to save money by purchasing flights, hotels, and subscriptions from other countries at a cheaper price. And you can do all this worry-free as NordVPN threat protection features protect you from viruses, malware, and phishing sites. Best of all, NordVPN costs the price of a cup of coffee a month, and one account can be used on up to 6 devices. To get the best discount on your NordVPN plan, go to nordvpn.com/gamescoop. Our link will also give you 4 extra months on the 2-year plan. There's no risk with Nord's 30-day money-back guarantee. That's nordvpn.com/gamescoop. 1 in 5 Americans has learned a new language on their bucket list, or life backlog, if you will. If that's you, make 2024 the year you finally check it off the list with Babbel. Upgrade your personal skill set in 2024 with Babbel, the science-backed language learning app that actually works. Babbel's quick 10-minute lessons are handcrafted by over 200 language experts to help you start speaking a new language in as little as 3 weeks. Its tips and tools are approachable, accessible, rooted in real-life situations, and deliver with conversation-based teaching so you're ready to practice what you've learned in the real world. I have a trip to Mexico coming up, so I've been using Babbel to brush up on my Spanish. The courses are short and sweet, so I can do one whenever I have a few minutes to spare. And the words and phrases it teaches you are designed for practical, real-world use, like ordering at a restaurant or asking for directions. Babbel can even provide you feedback on your pronunciation with its speech recognition tech. And it's not just for Spanish. Babbel includes 14 different language courses, each backed by a 20-day money-back guarantee. Here's a special limited-time deal for Scoop Nation. Right now, get up to 60% off your Babbel subscription, only for our listeners, at babbel.com/gamescoop. Get up to 60% off at babbel.com/gamescoop, spelled BABBEL.com/gamescoop. Rules and restrictions may apply. Okay, let's get into the news this week. This week we got NPD numbers for both March and for the first quarter of the year. And Xbox Series is 2022's best-selling platform by dollars made so far. The Nintendo Switch sold more units, but the Xbox Series family pair of consoles made more money. Mm-hmm. And at the end of the day, what's it all really about? So my question is, does this tell us that the Xbox Series is outselling the PlayStation 5 this year so far?
Yeah, it must be, right?
Right? Because the Series X costs the same. The Series S costs less. If they made more money,
maybe they're more readily available.
Well, that's that too.
That's definitely true.
That could absolutely be true.
Yeah, I mean, that was my sort of, you know, that's what I kind of figured out when I was reading this news. That certainly jives with what we're seeing in, like, IGN Commerce Land, as we write shopping posts and update deal articles to let people know when the PS5 and Xbox are available. Both have been available in Q1, but the Xbox is much more available. Mm-hmm. So I think that they're just having a better job getting them on store shelves. I still don't think it's the same story we've been saying for like over a year of like, I don't think that this sales data really tracks to demand at all. It's just about whoever can get more consoles made.
Yeah.
Interesting. Sam, what do you think? If Sony didn't sell the most units or make the most money, do you think people at Sony are being like, what is going on?
It's funny because Damon and I had a meeting about this week, and we talked about a bunch of different permutations about this. And I think it's pretty interesting. Like, this is something that's not in the NPD numbers, but it also matters to those companies how much the systems cost to make. And like, you know, it's the supply issue is really interesting, but it's like, how much, you know, how much profit does each of these companies make on each of these consoles? And time was that was like a couple bucks. Remember that? Mm-hmm. When it was like, for each Super Nintendo sold, they made like $3 or something. But they're like, that was not the point. The point is to Trojan horse all of the content in, all the game sales, right? Now it's subscriptions and game sales. And, you know, I think that's an interesting, that's probably what's happening internally to kind of, you know, answer that question is that, like, yeah, are they, you know, they're probably scrambling just like you can imagine to get supply up to meet demand. But I also think that like it would be a bizarre twist in the console wars if we look back at the first 2 years of these consoles and Xbox can say all this stuff about how, you know, they have the most consoles out there and they're the best-selling system, and that it might actually help them sell more systems and be more marketable and all this other stuff. It might actually snowball, and the entire reason for that is not necessarily consumer interest or desire, but supply. It's crazy, right? It's just a really interesting twist that I never thought would happen.
I think if there was just a bountiful supply of both consoles and they were everywhere, all over the world and every territory, surely the PS5 would be overwhelmingly selling better than the Xbox, right? Like,
well, I'd buy two.
Like, you know, and I'm enjoying the Xbox personally this generation, but just kind of trying to look at the trends and like, where does the fandom lie? And like, the PS5 is still, like, it's still the hot, crazy thing 2 years later, but Sony is having a very hard time getting them onto store shelves.
And Sony has released two very big exclusives this year so far, and Xbox hasn't released anything.
Yep.
So that makes it even more surprising to me. Okay, on the software side, Elden Ring is the best-selling game of the year so far, and not even that. Elden Ring is the best-selling game of the past 12 months.
Wow.
So going back to March of 2021, that means it's already outsold Resident Evil Village. You know, a game that it's the eighth entry in a long-running beloved franchise. Mm-hmm. Elden Ring is, well, I guess you could argue that just FromSoft games in general are their own sort of franchise.
I mean, it's kind of weird that we're having a conversation about a FromSoft game being the most, like, highest-selling game of all. Like, what? Like, that's absurd. If you would have told me back in, what, 2012 when Demon's Souls came out, like, how are they going to make the best-selling game of the past year? What? It's interesting to see, because I think we're definitely in a space where, like, I think our inherent bubble in the gaming industry and just people who like video games in the way that we do, they're like, yeah, of course, I want to play Elden Ring, or I'm at least interested in it. Mm. But I think I think Elden Ring's reach has clearly surpassed that bubble and is starting to reach, like, I want to play the hard game. I want to see what's so tough about this game. And there's, I think, an appeal and an allure to that. Yeah. And, you know, all anyone can talk about this year, because there hasn't really been that much released.
I mean, it's broken through in that mass market way of, like, it's in the New York Times. It's like, there's two games a year. Mm-hmm. Or like, whatever, I'm making that number up. But like a small number of games a year rise to that like mainstream level of like consciousness. And somehow like Elden Ring became one of them that like managed to bust through in that mainstream way.
Yeah, even
it's Namco's first hit since Pac-Man.
There's your headline.
In 1980. Yeah, even anecdotally, like my friends who haven't played a video game since they were in college or something, they're like, what's this? I keep seeing this Elden Ring game all over Reddit. Like,
exactly.
It's like, like you say, it's breaking through.
And it's also like, pardon the parlance, but it's a very like memeable game. Like people, it is kind of inherently made in a way so that people can talk about it in the way that we do video games nowadays, or just popular media. And I think this is conjecture on my part, but even having the George R. R. Martin like subtitle in there, it's like, he worked, the Game of Thrones guy worked on this. I'm interested now, because I remember when Game of Thrones was cool and popping, but it's an interesting phenomenon.
So best-selling game of the past 12 months, that means it's also outsold Battlefield 2042 and Far Cry 6. Very impressive feats, I think.
Wow.
Sam, I'm sure you can also corroborate, Elden Ring is the biggest thing on IGN of the year so far.
It is, yeah. It's just like anything we cover, you know, and provide about Elden Ring, from, you know, like awesome guides and stuff like that we're doing, to just any coverage of like just fun things, I think, to Nick's point of it being memeable. Like, it's really cool when someone does something cool in that game, and, you know, everybody wants to see that. I really liked the, is it Let Me Solo Her? Story that we ran last week, and that interview was so cool. That was like one of the coolest like game community stories we read. Check that out. Even if you haven't played Elden Ring or haven't played it a lot, it's like a really cool community story about a way to play a game. And, you know, I think there's also the element of like, it's kind of like speedrunning, where it's like people do amazing things in a game and you want to watch it. I mean, Breath of the Wild had that too, right? Mm-hmm. Where like people start doing like crazy stuff to break it. And if enough people play a game and can understand universally, like, oh, this is a really interesting way to break a game. Skyrim has this too, right? That it becomes like that type of game. It's the game that goes around. Whereas like there's some games where you can't really stretch them or break them that easily, or they're not conducive, but they're still played by a ton of people. Like Red Dead Redemption, like didn't really have like that playfulness that came out of it. Red Dead 2, I mean, mm-hmm. whereas GTA does, right? Mm-hmm. I don't know. There's just so much that people are doing and creating and making and modding this game now too. There's a lot of mods happening.
As I was saying last week, I've been cheesing my way all over the lands between. Mm-hmm. And I've noticed in like comments on Facebook, some people are getting a little tired of me talking about Elden Ring. So, but I did do another great cheese this week. I would love to tell the story if you'll give me just 2 minutes here. Please. Just to bear with me. So
I'll allow it.
Okay. Did you see people yelling about how like they're like, well, Sam's not allowed to talk about Breath of the Wild. Why should Damon be allowed to talk about Elden Ring? I'm like, that's not really the case. It was kind of a joke. Yeah, and we just realized that we were only comparing things to Breath of the Wild, which is like, you know, something that I self-imposed. It's not a Damon imposed man.
It's true. Anyway, I did another super fun cheese this week. I'm in the mountaintops of the Giants, so Commander Nile, if that's how it's pronounced, I was telling Nick before this.
He's a big jerk.
Big jerky boss. He's the boss of this fortress up in the mountains, and he's really tough, and he also summons the two, like...
He's got buddies.
Yeah, he summons these two spirit knights, so it's 3-on-1. Totally unfair. But here's the thing. You're in this fortress, and the boss is there the whole time. He doesn't spawn when you come to him, and he's like up in the top of this tower. So you can go around to the other side of the fortress and climb up on the wall of like the rampart, and you can look across the way, and through this tiny little port on the wall, you can see him there, and he's doing his just like idle animation. He's just like started doing this, and he's really far away, and the hole is small. But an arrow will fit through it. Or 1,000 arrows, or however many it took.
Skill.
Yeah, how many did it take?
Pixel perfect accuracy.
I went through every arrow in my inventory. I was crafting new arrows. I was throwing daggers at him, whatever I could get through there. I think it took like 30 minutes. He has thousands of hit points. My arrows are doing like 65 damage. Maybe if I crit, it's doing like 118. Anyway, eventually, he just keeled over dead. I beat him.
I like that he doesn't bother to move.
He doesn't bother to move. He's being shot with arrows.
Should I move over 18 inches? Nah. So I'll just die instead.
Shot with arrows. He falls, and then I can just make my way back to it and make it to the boss fight area. He's just not there. And
see, I love how the
game... Were his buddies there?
No, they were gone.
There's no wrong way to do it. You just you discovered something, and the game rewarded you because you discovered something, which is it's cool.
There's an argument to be made that like the game is so mean to you.
Yeah,
that like it justifies you being mean.
Exactly,
back. Like
it deserves what it gets.
That's why I was surprised about any of the nerfing that was happening. You know, it's like, well, just let people break this game however they want now.
I mean,
Damon, did you know that exploit from like looking it up, or was that something where you're just I bet I can shoot this guy from a distance?
No, I looked it up. I give it, I'll give it a good try. If I'm just like getting nowhere though, I'm like, oh, okay, it's time. Commander Nile cheese.
Exactly. Ex-boss name plus cheese.
Sometimes the cheese is difficult and it's like, oh, that sounds like more hassle than it's worth. I'll just keep trying.
I got a boundary break on this top one of this ledge. Like,
This one's like, okay, I think I could get up to this ledge where I'll see if I can do it. 30 minutes later, I've done it.
Well done.
Okay. Who are the richest and poorest video game characters? You may have wondered. Well,
what does it mean to be a poor video game character?
Well, let's find out, Justin. You know, it sounds like a lot of work figuring out this list. So Solitaire.com has done the work for us.
Okay.
Solitaire.com is a site where you can play solitaire.
Got it. Sure.
Now, so clearly they document who's the richest and most
poorest. Why are they making a list of the richest and poorest video game characters and emailing that list to the press? What makes Solitaire.com qualified to come up with this list? I don't think that's us for us to ask. Let's just consume the list.
Suffice it to say, you've been playing Solitaire nonstop since reading this list.
I mean,
so
it's
I think
true.
Something.
It is true.
Let's just consume the list. Don't think, just consume.
It's like the dream of every BuzzFeed. That's what they hope everyone's saying out there. Okay.
Just consume the list. Just consume the list. Just consume
the list. So this is the top five. According to Solitaire.com, the top five earning video game characters. Coming in at number five, Max Payne.
What?
Oh, he's wealthy?
He
spends too much on pills.
They think a New York detective would make $98,000 a year.
That cracks the top five?
That's the top five, according to this list.
Wait, that's just a job list. Like, well, he's a detective.
Yeah, but to be fair, a lot of video game characters don't even have jobs, so.
That's true.
Yeah, but what about like Scrooge McDuck? Mario's what about Batman?
I mean, maybe, to be fair, maybe they're talking about video game characters, not like Tony Stark.
Yeah. But that's divorcing the character from the context. He's clearly not in a good place in Max Payne 1, 2, and 3.
I agree with you. You could take it up the chain with solitaire.com. Anyway, I looked it up on the NYPD's website. Starting salary is $42,000, but they say salary after 5.5 years goes up to $85,000, and then including holiday pay, longevity pay, uniform allowance, and overtime, police officers may potentially earn over $100,000 per year.
Got it.
So, 98 could be.
I love the idea of Max Payne on holiday. I want that DLC.
He wears the Hawaiian shirt in 3, right?
I was going to say.
Yeah, totally.
Okay, coming in at number 4, highest paid video game characters, Alex Mason. Does anyone even know who this is?
Yeah, from Call of Duty,
Call
right?
Of Duty. Call of Duty.
Black Ops. The numbers, Mason.
He's an intelligence analyst for the CIA. This says he would make an impressive $107,000 a year. I looked on Glassdoor. Glassdoor actually says it's more like $116,000 for a...
Well, that's inflation back in the CIA Black Ops days.
Intelligence analyst. So
people are leaving the CIA and posting their salaries on Glassdoor.
And they get a knock on their door.
Black Ops agents specifically leaving their salary behind.
Yeah. What was it like to be a Black Ops agent? I'm just going to look it up. I kind of want to be one. See what their salary is.
Do they have direct deposit in their bank account? Like, how does this stuff work?
Sure. Okay, coming in at number 3, Albert Wesker.
Nice.
They say he was a virologist.
This is such a weird
thing. Sure.
Virologists can make $117,000 a year. So, yeah. Okay.
Those sunglasses, but of course, bald mane.
I think he was only a virologist early in his career, right?
I was going to say,
I think
he's
an executive at Umbrella.
Yeah. He was captain of STARS, right? And then he just went rogue and he like injected himself with a T-virus or something like that.
Yeah, he could probably rob a lot of banks with that.
I thought Wesker worked for Umbrella.
Yeah.
He did at first, but I think he left and went on to do his own thing.
Let's see how Umbrella fares on Glassdoor.
No, thank you.
Had no upward mobility.
Okay, coming in at number 2, Solid Snake.
Okay.
They say being a special forces soldier for the U.S. Army would make $140,000. But I don't know. I looked at Glassdoor says $70,000 for a special forces officer. Mm. And I don't know who to believe.
This makes sense, though, given that what we know about Metal Gear Solid 2 Solid Snake, because him and Otacon formed Philanthropy, which is basically a counter-terrorist organization, and they did that themselves. They funded all of that. So, yeah, you gotta make a little bit of money in order to do that.
Yeah, he's not
in. Maybe they raised venture capital.
It's a dot-com era boom, so maybe.
Like private backers. Maybe he had to sell off some of his nano machines.
His nano stock.
Okay. Any guesses? Who's number 1? Highest.
It's gonna be Mario because he's a plumber.
He's a plumber. He's an astronaut. He's a doctor.
He did work. He worked for construction early on.
Mario, but only in doctor form.
Dr. Mario. I said, please, it's Dr.
Handsome Jack from Borderlands.
Okay. Weapons manufacturer.
CEO of Hyperion Corp. They would guess he would make $430,000, but I kind of feel like if you're the CEO of like an outer space weapons agency, it's probably a little bit higher.
Billions of dollars.
He's an intergalactic warmonger. Yeah, he's probably making a little bit more.
It's actually quite a bit higher than this.
They own and mine several planets.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yes. Yeah.
It's like you have human beings on Earth that have $300 billion.
Yeah. So there you go. Top 5 highest earners, according to solitaire.com. But what about the lowest earners?
The list is a little sus, I'm going to be honest.
What about the lowest earners?
Did you put together this list?
No, this is solitaire.com. And they're getting lots of advertising.
They put the lowest earners together? That's just rude.
The lowest earners is so funny. It's like there's a Primal Rage where you play as a dinosaur.
On the occupation side, if we're going that route, Bonk is a caveman. They have no currency.
He just has meat.
He can trade you some meat. Okay, coming in at number 5. This is lowest paid. Ryu.
Oh, yeah, okay.
But this is a little...
What's Ryu's job?
So they say he's a martial arts instructor.
I think he's a...
I was unable to find any...
He's more of a pupil.
I think he's just like... doesn't he just wander the earth getting into these fights?
If anything, right? he's paying to get trained.
A street fighter.
He's a street fighter. I think he just wanders... He's like a spiritual wanderer. He's on a walkabout.
Yeah, he's not about material possessions.
Ken's rich, though.
I don't...
Well, hold on. Isn't his... But his... Is Ryu's level at the dojo?
Yeah.
Is that true?
Does that would indicate that, you know, there is a dojo that he teaches in?
Or maybe he just trained there. I don't know. I wasn't able to find...
What do you think Blanca's job is?
He was actually number six, but once you beat up this car enough times in the minigame, loses more monetary value over time.
Do you think Hagar has a family?
What? We know that Hagar does?
He's the mayor.
Yeah, he's the mayor. Yeah.
Oh, yeah, okay. That's right.
Coming in at number four, Desmond Miles. Because he's
a bartender.
A bartender.
Yeah.
However, they say as a bartender in New York City, you'd make about $28K a year. And I bet bartenders in New York City make a lot more than that.
Yeah, I think so too.
Desmond from Assassin's Creed is a bartender? That's a part of the story?
Yeah.
That's the canon when Abstergo kidnaps him in the first Assassin's Creed.
Yeah.
Well, okay. Do they put him in a machine?
Yeah, they put him in the... Kristen Bell puts him in the Animus. That's a whole thing.
And then he actually relives the life of a former, more famous bartender. Yeah. That's how he gets his abilities.
This is good trivia. What's the name of the bar where he works?
Oh, gosh.
Bad Weather.
That's why he has all those hoodies.
Coming in at number three. Cloud Strife.
Oh.
Okay, that doesn't... No. I call shenanigans. He's a mercenary.
He's a mercenary. He's only in it...
He's ex-military mercenary.
And they're paid.
They think he would make $26K a year as a private first-class soldier in the army.
The name alone sounds like he makes a ton of money.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Is that like his Shinra wages?
Also, he used to work for the most prolific company in the entire planet of Gaia. Right. That makes no sense.
It didn't trickle down to him, apparently.
Is it Gil in that?
Yeah, Gil.
Maybe Gil exchange has just really, really gone south.
This list does not get better from here. If you take umbrage with it so far, coming in at number two, Link.
That makes sense.
And they say,
I mean, he has 0 rupees.
They say Link would earn a measly 25K per year as a knight. Okay. Right. Listen, solitaire.
Breath of the Wild, Link, clearly.
Is that how much Sir Patrick Stewart makes?
Link is not a knight.
Yeah, what are you talking about?
But they say a knight was paid an average of 2 shillings per day in the 1200s, which means that Link would take home just over 25K when taking into consideration increases in inflation. Really?
Two shillings.
He's freelancing, destroying
all
those pots.
How easy is that? What is 2 shillings a day in 2022?
The shilling to rupee conversion.
Oh, man.
Link is not employed.
Maybe he has more time to play solitaire and improve his brain skills.
Yeah.
They're clearly fans of Breath of the Wild, Link, who was employed as a knight by the Hyrulean Army.
I guess so. Maybe that's the one.
If Bonk's not number one, this list is suspect.
Bonk is not number one.
Wait. I think Link is a knight in Breath of the Wild, right? 100 years
ago? He's correct. A knight there.
Yeah, in the past. Yeah, the Age of Calamity era Link, before he gets knocked out and wakes up.
What about about Chuck Rock 2, Son of Chuck? You play as a baby. You are literally just a baby.
Caveman. No, coming in number one on the lowest earners on this list is Pac-Man, which I guess makes sense. However, they say with a salary of just over 20K per year as a security guard.
What?
Hold on, let me check what his job was.
They have called Pac-Man a security guard.
I feel like he's...
Well, because there's a cartoon, right?
Well, okay, is that his job in the cartoon? Maybe that's true.
Yeah,
I don't remember
They work for... Oh, man. Here's a rabbit hole. I think the ghosts work for a company.
What? I didn't know there was lore.
Is there Pac lore?
Yeah.
This is all from Pac-Land, actually.
Okay. Most episodes of the series center around the ongoing battle between the Pac family and their only known enemies, the ghost monsters, Blinky, Inky, Pinky, Clyde, and Sue. They work for Mesmeron, whose sole mission is to locate and control the source of power pellets, which serve as the primary food and power source for the city, and is also the deus ex machina in virtually every episode. The second and final season later introduces Super Pac and Pac-Man's teenage cousin PJ.
Gotta seize the means of power pellets.
So
I think Pac-Man goes to work.
Security guard at this company?
No. So the ghosts, I think, work for Mesmeron.
Right.
But Pac-Man, I think, you know, has some kind of defender of the city. I can't remember. Maybe that's where that came from, though.
I love it.
That's great.
Honorable mentions. Given Mario's Italian heritage, he would earn a salary of $42,000 working as a plumber in Italy.
But he doesn't live in Italy.
He lives in New York. We all know this from the movie.
And he's constantly picking up coins.
He lives in New Dock City.
Lara Croft, they think she would make about $55,000 working as a British archaeologist. But she's just an heiress, right?
Yeah. She's innately rich. Yeah. She has a butler that you can lock in a closet.
I'm pretty sure her title is Tomb Raider.
That's on her business card.
If I was, it would be.
Lara Croft, Tomb Raider. Not archaeologist.
While Sonic the Hedgehog isn't currently on the job hunt, based on his ability to run at supersonic speeds, it is only fitting that he would earn a salary of $47,000 as a professional athlete. As like what? Like an Olympic sprinter?
He'd probably get a Nike deal or something.
Yeah.
He'd break every record. I saw the movie. He runs the ocean back in like 2 seconds.
And finally, Pikachu would be perfectly suited to a job as a detective, earning him $48,000 a year. Although, considering his element type, he would also make for a great electrician.
That's just manipulating an animal. That's just harming an animal for your benefit.
There you go. That's the list of richest and poorest video game characters.
Boy.
As compiled by Solitaire.
I feel stupider.
I'm so glad we spent all this time.
This is how he wears us down before 20 questions. He just grinds us down.
Let's check in with the listeners.
Hey, listeners.
After that,
remember you can always reach us at the email address, gamescoop@ign.com, just like Daniel Ring in Brisbane, Australia did. He provided a pronunciation guide. Mm. Says, one of my all-time favorite games is Star Wars Republic Commando. Replay it at least once a year. I was bummed it never got a sequel from its cliffhanger ending. With exclusivity no longer with EA, being an Xbox player, I would love to see the Coalition do a Gears of War-esque Republic Commando squad shooter set in the Clone Wars. My question is, if you could have any studio do a Star Wars game, what studio and type of game would you want?
Mm.
Sam?
We've definitely done this before, right?
Let's do it again.
All right, let's do it again. I would like, the Star Wars game I want to play is always a space combat shooter. I really, really like the space combat stuff in Rogue Squadron 2 and 3. Mm-hmm. And then the recent Squadrons was pretty fun. I like that. But I think that, Bungie, and then I guess 343 might have had one of these Halo games. The Halo space shooter lovers are pretty cool, and they look cool. So I think those teams would do a good job with a Star Wars game. But I definitely like somebody that has the chops graphically to do one of those, because I think they need to be beautiful, and then they need to have really good spaceship controls, which are pretty specific for Star Wars. I really like this game. So, and single player, please. None of this.
Oh yeah.
None of this multiplayer stuff.
Nick, how about you?
Oh man. Mine almost exists. I think it's the closest analog. Like when I thought of Dream Star Wars, I'm like, Jedi Fallen Order, but with maybe more RPG elements. Like I want to level up stats. I want equipment and items I find in the environment to have some sort of tangible effect as opposed to just a cosmetic one. That's just a me thing, just because I love a Souls-like game, like an Elden Ring. But if I had whatever I want, if I can make whatever I want, I want Sucker Punch to team up with Respawn, which again would never happen. But open world action RPG Mandalorian game in the vein of Jedi Fallen Order, but centered around the Mandalorian.
Well, Sucker Punch occurred to me too because of Ghost of Tsushima.
Mm-hmm.
You've already got your sword melee combat in there.
Yeah, that works too.
Yeah, I can totally see something.
They made sand look really good.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But I hate sand.
I don't like sand.
Of course. And it gets everywhere.
Justin.
That's okay.
A Lego Star Wars game.
We just got a very good Lego Star Wars game.
That was a very good Lego Star Wars game.
So as I was reflecting on this, there's been a lot of really, really good Star Wars games over the year that have covered Like, we got really good space shooters, and we got really good third-person action adventure, and going back in the day, we got really good Doom clones and first-person shooters, and I really like real-time strategy games. They even made a couple really good real-time strategy Star Wars games, and so, you know, I feel
there's
like...
Star Wars Chess. You like that too, right?
I have not played Star Wars Chess, but I don't want to get my arms torn off. You gotta let the Wookiee win. I feel like my plate is full, and we've had a bounty of really excellent Star Wars games over the years. I feel a little sting that Star Wars 1313 was canceled.
Yeah.
And so for all the really awesome Star Wars games we've gotten, we never actually got like just the straight up Uncharted style third person adventure game. Just like tell a cool, rad Star Wars story, play as a cool character. Like I'm not taking anything away from Jedi Fallen Order, which is super awesome, but it did have a little bit more of like a specific pointed vision instead of just a very broad Uncharted, like Naughty Dog making a Star Wars game. Mm-hmm. Just like,
if only
straight
we
up,
could put somebody from Naughty Dog in charge of a Star Wars.
I know, like, I hope the rumors are true and that it all kind of, you know, coalesces around that kind of product. But I think that's
Amy Hennig just announced, they announced that game, and that's going to be, I hope, exactly what you're talking about.
Yeah, that's the rumor. Awesome. We'll see in years or however long it takes.
Yeah.
No, I know it's announced, but not the specifics of like it's going to be something Star Wars 13.
It could be
like
the space shooter that I'm looking for. That's how much we know about that game.
So I was really bummed to see that go, and that's what I would like to see.
The one that occurred to me
the footage we were watching reminded me of Shadows of the Empire, and that game is really, really silly and funny. And I like Dash Rendar a lot, and I think 9 more levels of that would be fun.
Bring back Dash.
But it has to be those exact graphics.
Yeah.
It's really muddy, blocky.
The one that occurred to me would be a return, because I recently introduced my 2-year-old son to pod racing. So we watched the pod racing scene in episode 1. He loves it. And it's actually great. I'm always looking for things that are like exciting but not too violent to watch, and so it's perfect. So yeah, I think we should, like, what about a new pod racing game with like our, on Unreal Engine 5, with the
need
power
for pod racing hot pursuit.
Pod racing hot pursuit. Yeah, that could be something good. Even if it's like put playground games on it, be as good looking as Forza Horizon 5. Doesn't need to be an open world pod racing game. I think that would be weird for
pod
racing.
Team of 300 people and just cost $80 million.
Yes. But if someone said open world pod racing game, would you say no?
No, I wouldn't say no. But like the pods aren't very like they work. Yeah. They're meant for that race. They're not meant for just like day to day getting
but
around.
But imagine if they were
just commuting.
Yeah. Yeah. New pod racing game. I think it's time. This is BJ Bumgarner. What's that, Sam?
Well, I would just like to find they made an arcade cabinet for pod racing, and it has like a molded, yellow end of a pod racer. And I haven't seen one of those at a convention or anything like that. I'd really, really like to play one of those.
Well, speaking of arcades, Sam, BJ Bumgarner says, at the end of last week's episode, you talked about the arcade phenomenon of Street Fighter II. I tried doing some research about arcade game revenue, and not surprisingly, facts are difficult to come by. I was able to find some cited sources stating that Street Fighter II made £260 million in the UK in a 12-month period. Some websites had extrapolated this to say it made $5 billion in 2 years during its peak, but there are a fair amount of assumptions made in this calculation. As for Pac-Man, sources disagree about how much Americans spent on Pac-Man in 1982, but place it somewhere between $1.7 billion and $6 billion. However, other estimates place the total lifetime earnings somewhere between $3 and $6 billion. Finally, I may have found decent evidence of a bigger or equal arcade phenomenon since Street Fighter II. The project leader, Mark Turmel of NBA Jam, stated it made $1 billion in 12 months. While this number is lower than Pac-Man and Street Fighter II estimates, he's quoted as saying it went down as the highest earning video arcade game of all time. No matter what game made the most, it just amazes me how much money went into arcades. My question is, did all this money go to arcade owners, or did a percentage get paid back to game publishers? Sam?
Yeah, there were some schemes like that where there would be like an operator would have a route, and then that route might be owned by a game publisher or something like that. I think that's pretty uncommon. Like the idea was that you would be investing a lot of money into buying a game. They would cost hundreds of dollars at the time, which would be thousands of dollars now, and like that's still the case. If you buy a brand new Star Wars Battle Pod game, for example, that is the one that's in the big sphere. Like those are like $20,000 or something, like really much more expensive than you think for what's basically a dedicated you know, operating system, a unique screen, and then, you know, controls, and a build. It's a lot of money. Like a pinball machine high end is 12K. So that's more than that. And you can, the intricacies of making pinball is crazy. But the point is, once you buy those, the idea is like your earnings will increase at your location because, you know, that you have a new game. And like, that's all the advertisements at the time were like, increase your earnings by modifying the game you have, pay another set of, you know, money to like upgrade Ms. Pac-Man to go faster. Like that was the whole issue, is that once you had a game on your property, you were taking those quarters to the bank. So the earnings, you know, are really of, you know, the selling the game for a company like Midway, who sold Pac-Man in America. And then the operators would make that money back, you know, by making quarters. But remember, they would also get sick of their games after a while and they would stop earning and they want to swap those out. So like, that's where it gets a little murky. Like if you worked with a jukebox distributor, right? Then, or, you know, there's an established pinball industry at the time of arcades, then they would probably come grab that game back and then like work out, you know, either another location for it or a secondhand market. So like there was an intermediary company also making money. It just wasn't, you know, Midway or Atari. Does that make sense? Does that explain anything?
Yeah, I think so.
That's my understanding of it. And that hasn't changed. That's exactly how it is now.
I mean, if a game made $1 billion, that didn't go back to Namco. That went to the arcade operators.
Yeah, that's what I
was going to say. Because they made the initial investment in buying the cabinet.
And especially since arcade cabinets would change hands, like how would you even... Yeah. Like at my local 7-Eleven when I was a kid, like they had like a Tron...
Yeah.
Or I'm sorry, a Robotron cabinet. It's like, who knows how many places, locations it had been until it arrived at that 7-Eleven, you know?
Here's what and that know. Was... So let me make the distinction. Like that 7-Eleven could have outright bought a game and put it in the corner. Right. That would be fine. They would have to secondhand market that afterwards, keep it forever. But like a laundromat would likely do that. But what likely was an operator on a route had that game and brought it in, and then they would swap that out with other games. And so that operator, that's what's interesting. That operator might be owned at that time back then by Midway. That could have been an internal distribution company, but that wasn't always the case. As I said, like there was already a countrywide established web of jukeboxes and pinball machines and, you know, amusement devices like that, that like, you know, they would have been like, oh, well, you know, the new Pac-Man craze is happening. Let's buy 20 of them. And then we'll just put them all over our route in San Francisco. That's exactly how that would have worked.
Yeah, that makes sense.
How much money did Ms. Pac-Man make in coin op sales in 2021? Those cabinets exist.
I know.
They're still in barcades.
Any barcade, I bet Ms. Pac-Man is one of the most popular games.
Mm-hmm. It still earns.
I know. That's crazy.
And probably
there's like an anniversary one with Galaga in it that you see that's like half Ms. Pac-Man, half Galaga. That's like only 15 years old or something.
Yeah.
Well, it's like if I were to go into an arcade, there's 100 games I could put a quarter in. Like Ms. Pac-Man is probably going to be like, it's going to be stack ranked near the top of like, sure, I'll put a quarter in that. Yeah. Let's go.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Especially if it's a cocktail you can sit down on in an arcade where everything else is upright.
All right, that brings us to video game 20 questions. Our suggestion this week comes from Jonathan from Oregon. Let the questioning begin.
You don't need your laptop anymore. Mm-mm.
Would you call the star of this game rich or wealthy?
Yes.
Oh, boy. Yes.
Salary would be all that matters here.
They're not a knight. did this game come out in the 90s?
Yes.
Sounding like Arrow the Acrobat.
Is this a Nintendo game?
Yes.
Wow.
Okay.
Getting strong punch-out vibes.
Yeah, he's a boxer, professional boxer. But it's Glass Joe, so he doesn't earn. Did this game originally come out on the Nintendo 64?
Yes. Cool.
We know it's not Link.
There's only like 11 games that Nintendo made for that system.
Was this game made by Rare?
Yes.
Yes!
That's fine.
Wait,
there's not that many. Okay.
Is this game, what is it, Blast Core?
But we can't ask the game.
Apologies.
But rephrase it so that it's not the title of the game.
And remember, do you know what the main character in Blast Corps earns? Because I'm thinking this is indicating James Bond.
Yeah, so there's GoldenEye, there's Jet Force Gemini, there's Donkey Kong 64, Banjo-Kazooie.
Is this Blast a game Corps. Centered around destruction?
No.
Okay. Okay.
So yeah, it's probably GoldenEye.
Is this a first-person shooter?
Yes.
Wow. Is it GoldenEye?
Does this game have any GoldenEye?
We did it.
Oh, eight questions. Yeah, I'm assuming James Bond is wealthy.
Yeah, he's not in it for the money, though. I really
know what Black Ops agents make.
Yeah.
So I feel like that's appropriate.
I mean, he's got, in like the modern movies, his apartment was nice.
Yeah.
Plus, those state benefits in the UK, right?
Like, that's true.
He's got to camp for something. Yep. He's got
he actually
a good
doesn't own any of that stuff, though. It's just leased to him.
Yeah.
What about his tux? You don't think he owns it?
This footage is like remade.
This footage,
right?
It's like, the Wii make.
Oh, got it.
Remember the Wii make.
This is how we remember it looking.
Yeah, right.
Or they put Daniel Craig into it.
I made a core memory many years ago. We did the top 125 Nintendo games. It's a project on IGN when Nintendo was having its 125th anniversary, and we did let's plays of all 125 games.
God. Yeah,
and one of them was GoldenEye, and it was like me and Tim Geddes, and I don't remember. Like we're like let's do a 4-player GoldenEye deathmatch. It'll be fun. It'll be awesome. And it was like the least fun. Like the game runs at like 8 frames per second. The controls are really weird.
Yeah.
And it was like, I've never in my life experienced a bigger mismatch between like my memories of like I've been GoldenEye every day. And then like trying to play that game in, you know, whatever year it was, 2018, was a very, what a harsh lesson in like your memories not always matching what reality was.
Do you remember they were supposed to remake it for Xbox Live Arcade?
Yes.
And it was like all but finished, but they just couldn't work it out with Nintendo. To, like, get the rights.
Yeah, was that like officially announced, or was that just something we knew?
Yeah, there's
rumors?
Articles on IGN.com from like 2008.
Something like GoldenEye Rogue Agent on the GameCube, right?
What's that? You can't top it.
GoldenEye Rogue Agent.
But then there was like, Perfect Dark was in the rare that rare collection.
Yeah,
that came out.
One's still in there. Yeah,
the Wii game that we were just looking at. I mean, that was a cutting edge. System that was a little bit behind the other systems graphically, and boy does that look like crap now. I can't believe how bad that GoldenEye looks.
Yeah.
That was a ground up made Wii game. Like Mario Galaxy looks great still. What happened?
Yeah.
I forgot to mention that in 2015, IGN published an article, The Wealthiest Video Game Characters.
Who are they?
You remember this, Sam?
Did I write it?
2015.
No, it's IGN staff.
That might have been when I ran features. That may have been one that came through my desk.
How does it align with Solitaire's ranking?
IGN thought Mario would be number one wealthiest video game character.
It's a lot of coins.
I mean, he's just hoarding coins, right?
There's a game dedicated to making those coins.
That was followed by Michael DeSanta from GTA 5.
Oh, sure.
Lara Croft on there, of course. Tom Nook.
Landlord.
Yep.
I mean,
what's those bells, right?
Yeah. If there's like your total bells is like several million that you have to pay back, and there's like 8 people that live in your town.
We had Handsome Jack on the list and Solid Snake, then Cave Johnson. You know what game that's from?
Yeah, it's Portal 2. Yeah.
I don't remember that name, but
yeah, he ran the Aperture Science.
I just want to point out, if Mario is assumed to be that rich, then the princess is just richer. So why do we choose Mario?
Yeah, that's true. It is true.
He's got to pay taxes.
Her.
It's a tax fraud.
And then Andrew Ryan, of course, from Bioshock. And then the list ends with someone from Resident Evil, but not Albert Wesker. It's Oswell Spencer.
Of the Spencer Mansion fame.
Yeah.
That makes sense. That's a pretty good list. Yeah. That's a better list.
Solitaire.
Biased very much.
Solitaire.com, Justin.
I'm uncomfortable with how much we're saying that name.
This episode is not sponsored by Solitaire.com.
But it's Solitaire if you're listening.
Our door is open.
I've got a hankering to play some boring single-player card games.
Sam, we wish you could have been in the studio with us, but how was it for you being the one person on location? Is this okay?
It was great because I got to turn on these games. Mm-hmm. Hang out in my garage a little bit. The postman came by. It was very loud during the show. You know,
cool.
That kind of stuff. Cool. Home work from home problems.
Yeah.
I would say it worked out pretty smoothly. We were hearing worked Sam out. Just fine.
Yep. Worked out pretty well. Justin, you flying home tonight? Tomorrow?
Tomorrow.
All right. Yeah. Safe travels.
Thank you. I'll
hurry back. Anytime you're back, we'll figure out a way to do this in studio.
Yeah, it's a good idea.
We'll Nick.
More Picross.
Thanks for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
Thanks for
always
being
a
on,
pleasure.
Nick.
Yeah.
Thank you.
And that's all the scoops that we have for you this week. Also, thank you to everyone that working behind the scenes here, Marian, Tayo, Jamie. Lots of people are, you know, did a lot of technical troubleshooting to make this all work again. It's been a long time since we've recorded in studios. No one remembers how to do it. We're relearning. It's like we woke up from a coma.
Yeah, mm-hmm. A little bit.
But it's good to be back. Remember, you can always reach us at the email address, gamescoop@IGN.com. My name is Damon. This is IGN Gamescoop, and we're out.
Stranger, I'd like to introduce you to something new, or perhaps something very, very old. The Heresies of Radolf Burntwine is a horror fantasy medical mystery following the titular monk turned traveling medical investigator. Follow Radolf as he navigates a nightmare world in which viruses are gods and the human race are not their favored children. Steeped in history and an aesthetic that can only be described as a combination of occult academia and laboratory Judaica, the Heresies of Radolf Burntwine have been described as Umberto Eco meets H.P. Lovecraft. For more information, check out the Patreon at thorb.info. But take care, dear stranger, for some truths are best left unknown.